you, people. This is the Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis. Yes. Off for another day of broadcast insolence.
Bro, I would just try to ask everyone on the show and you personally if we can all be best today, since the president has declared this the official Be Best Day in honor of the First Lady's new platform.
Okay.
Unveiled in the Rose Garden this afternoon, just moments ago.
What do I have to do to be best?
Well, you be best. So you are you work on your well-being. Your social skills.
You're compassionate.
Your relationship skills to make them positive relationships. That's part of the platform.
I see.
You treat people with respect.
Uh-huh.
Better decision making.
Uh-huh.
It's part of it.
Okay.
She's really just talking to her husband, I think.
You know what? They always say in the White House, everybody is just addressing an audience of one.
Yes.
Well, even she is at this point. Listen, Donald, this is what we do. Did you see that her family, her mom and dad,
mm-hmm.
were in immigration court last week.
Yep.
And they're apparently trying to get a change in their visa status here. And then when they got photographed coming out of immigration court, there was like this whole, oh no, this is personal and private. You can't drag these people into it. Well, they're here on the chain migration visa. That's how they got into the country.
The green cards, yeah. That's what they suspect, is that they did benefit as part of that policy.
Yes, the chain migration policy.
You mean the one that's ending?
The one that the president says should end. And the and then on top of that, they're trying to move over to the genius visa or whatever it is, the mm-hmm. Einstein visa they call it or whatever, mm-hmm. that brings people in
for
based on their
engineering
skills.
And yeah. tech skills and others like that, very specialty skills.
Right. Because mm-hmm. they got to get on that. Otherwise, they would have to go. And believe me, I think some Americans would make them go, because if the Hondurans have to go, they got to go. So
yeah,
what a crazy thing.
Kind of awkward moment when they showed the picture of them leaving the U.S. citizen ceremony, and everyone said, well, what's going on there? That was May 2nd last week. So mm-hmm.
right.
they soon will be citizens.
I think they...
They aren't already, but I mean, we don't really know. That's part of the weirdness of the whole thing.
Right. Or did they just become automatic citizens because the president said they can't? I don't know.
These two are with me.
Yeah.
It's like getting in at the club. I'm with them.
Go ahead, let them in. Right, you're on the list. They're on the list. There's a guy in an all-black suit and an earpiece and a clipboard, and he's the guy that lets you into the country in sunglasses in the middle of the night, and he's the guy that lets you into the country.
Yeah, I didn't realize it works like that.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. It works just like it does for you and Boris at the nightclub.
Mm-hmm. Hey! I'm with him.
Let's not ask about Boris's citizenship.
Yeah, ICE, never separate. A good topic.
Yeah, no. Probably not.
No. Well, Boris is welcoming everyone into the country.
Right. We're going to make Boris the new bouncer for right. the country.
You're in.
You're in.
And you know, Melania has to do is walk up to the rope, and they're going to let her right in.
Right.
Right. I mean, that wasn't even a question. They just let her in, no cover, move along. They don't need to know who she is or what she is. Right? It just is the way that goes. So basically what the president is doing is he wants to run the country like a nightclub. I think that is what we've just learned. Hot girls.
And their parents.
Right. And nobody in a funny hat. Right? He's turning the United States of America into bottled blonde.
With a very strict dress code.
Right, is what he is doing.
Can you wear the saggy jeans to the immigration ceremony?
No, you may
not.
Get
booted for that? What about some of the overalls and what are some of the other things?
Hats. Guys can't wear hats.
Yeah.
No one can wear a hat.
Workout pants without any cover up.
Right.
Everything's showing.
Pants that are too long or too short. What was that nightclub here in Chicago that had this like 86 different things that you could not wear?
No jerseys, right? That was an obvious
no
one.
No jewelry. She keeps you out of all Major
no
League
bandanas.
Baseball players. Right?
Something to do with denim, too.
No jean jackets.
Oh, jean jackets. Yeah. I think that's what it was. Basically everything.
Right.
Stonewashed. Also no.
The bottle blonde rules. Is the new immigration
just post
rules.
That up right at the front
yeah,
of the country.
Right, you know what? Right, have it actually have a banner that comes down from Lady Liberty, like she's holding it.
Mm-hmm. Check.
Right.
Check.
Instead of actually the torch, right. she's actually holding a whole banner of rules. And then as your boat arrives,
can it go up and down? You know, it's like new for each person. It's like, whoa, swim back.
Oh, man.
Bring us your tired, anyway, as long as they're not wearing don't wash jeans.
Listen,
they're poor.
Melania has done. I feel for her. She's having a. This can't be easy, right? Even if she doesn't care about this, which I think everybody kind of does. I mean, it's very hard not to. It's humiliating, and the whole thing has got to just be, you know. It is what it is.
And there's more coming out, too. I mean, you heard over the weekend, there's another person who's come forward to say that she was there when the president had, you know, relationships with her friend, and she was in the room. And so it's just sort of mounting now.
Yeah.
Pressure.
Don't say mounting, but I understand what you mean.
Whatever word you would use. But that's, you know, there's got to be pressure on her, on
right.
Melania, when
yeah.
that kind of stuff happens.
And she's
fun.
Out there. And her parents are like, thank you for immigration status, but I think we're going to all have to leave, don't you? I mean, isn't that...
They're coming just to get Melania? Right.
Yes. Take a boy. We take a boy. In middle of night.
Middle of night. Please.
I don't know.
He's got to be happy.
Really? Does he look... I mean, honestly...
He does. I mean, look, he's a kid.
Yeah.
That's a tough position to be in.
Okay, let me just ask you a question. If you were that kid, would you mm-hmm. rather have to stay with mommy or daddy in this situation?
It seems like daddy's got a lot going on. So, yes, I think mommy would be
yeah.
the choice.
I'm with mom, too. We'll go back to Slovenia. We'll get a hut. We'll be okay. It's a beautiful country.
A Vespa.
Right, we'll get
what
a Vespa.
What more could a kid want?
Right. Vespa. We'll live in a, you know, a quaint, bucolic town
get
in a
pet
mountain.
Goat.
Right. Exactly. They live like Violetta does in the summer. When
like
she goes
royalty.
Back to, yeah. Mm-hmm. Get our own Don't well. We have to share the well with the neighbors. We
did just get our own well, actually.
Yeah, see how fancy that is?
But when there's overflow or I don't know, the water's not always
got our own well, no big deal. Yeah. Bragging to the neighbors.
Just stay away from Boom Boom because I think he's trouble.
Get it. I'm sure Melania get indoor plumbing, it'd be good. She and boy would have a good time. All right.
It'd be a big step down from the penthouse, wouldn't it?
I don't know.
And the White House.
Is the penthouse in the White House? Is it really? Is it? I mean, what goes on there? Although it was said today, this is interesting. Mm-hmm. It was said about her today that she's decided to make the best of this. Initially, she sort of chafed at all of this and was like, I don't know if I want to be a part of it, and I'm just kind of here. But she now sees this, at least her press office is saying this today. She sees this as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, which, of course, it is.
Yes, it is.
And she wants to make the best of it. And you know what? I like her. I think it's the great irony of everything she stands for is, you know, 180 degrees away from the way people are behaving. But it's great. I mean, she's great. She lends an air of elegance and prestige.
Well, and grace and dignity in the line of fire, because it seems like, you know, I always feel for the first lady and the children. And it seems that look at the things they've said about her in the course of the nastiness of politics. And so, look, you know, even over the weekend, the Washington Post floated a story about how they're living separate lives. And then they've sort of walked it back after the White House pushed back, said, no way, this is not true. She's there. She's in D.C. with the family. Mm-hmm. And separate lives is totally a mischaracterization of what's happening.
Okay. I doubt that's true, but okay.
Well, she's there.
She's that right. Where else is she going to go? She has to clear with the White House her travel.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they've been forced to walk that story back. I'll just say that.
All right. Okay. Let us now check with Ben Bradley, who's in the WGN TV newsroom, coming up in just a minute. But first, in the WGN radio newsroom, here is Judy Pilak.
Well, boating season has just begun in Chicago with a mishap. We'll have more at 3:30.
It's always the first week. It's like the first time it snows.
It's the beginning.
Here, everybody sliding into each other. Violetta's got the traffic brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation.
10 years ago, WGN-TV introduced Illinois piano prodigy Emily Bear. Now the girl with a gift is playing a different tune. Tonight's cover story, WGN-TV News at 9. I've seen her play. She is amazing. Composer. Pianist, amazing. She's been on the Ellen Show, too. She's terrific.
All right. Is Ben Bradley there? Do I have Ben? Don't know that I have Ben.
Maybe Ben's not here yet.
We're having a little bit of...
Ben! Ben, are you there?
All right. We'll just wait for Ben to pick up right now. We had a little technical snafu from the WGN-TV television studios.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I promised you people that it was going to be a technical adventure for these next couple of months
uh-huh.
here because of the
It's good to prepare people.
I hear Ben moving into position.
Mm-hmm. Ben just tweeted about the boat that overturned on the Chicago River.
Yes, we've had a mishap
downtown.
Already.
It's, yeah, frightening. There I have been interviewing witnesses. So
hello.
Breaking news going on there. Hey, Ben.
Ben, can you hear us?
Hold on, I do not hear.
But how could you not hear if I just said, can
now
you hear
I hear you.
Now you hear me.
Earth
okay.
He knew you were asking that question. It's the first question you always ask when you can't hear.
Like I cannot hear. Why can't I hear? Where am I? Who am I?
All right, now, Ben.
We're glad you're here, Ben.
Thank you. It took a lot of work to get here today.
It did.
I've been in front of one camera and three microphones just to achieve this.
Let us let's talk about the boat that flipped over in Lake Michigan here. It's right now the boats are starting to fill up the harbors, which is great. This is the time of year you want to see this. I'm going to start forgetting that we missed about 2 weeks of the season already, but that's okay because those 2 weeks are past.
Glass is half full.
We're on it now. I was walking by the harbors this weekend and it's gorgeous. Gorgeous weekend.
This was the weekend when everything turns in Chicago.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. What happened? And something's overturned. What is the story here?
Well, so a friend of mine happened to be crossing the river right near Jackson and Wacker and saw in one of these small little boats one guy on it, and it just overturned right in the middle of the river.
Motorboat, not a kayak or anything?
It's hard to tell. It's got a full hull, so... Okay. You know, it wasn't a sail. You know, I don't know. It looked like a dinghy almost.
But it had a motor on it.
It appeared to, yeah.
Yes.
So it overturns, and the person on board is in the water and then was able to kind of get on to the hull. And then from the vantage point that we saw, and we put this video on my Twitter feed, thankfully, one of the shoreline sightseeing boats, the Voyager, was no more than 100 yards away. And so we understand... the guy was picked up. That sightseeing boat, got there before the Chicago Police Marine Unit did, and that boater is okay.
Good.
And of course, Ro and I, our thoughts immediately turn to: we're glad he's okay, but he has just been in the Chicago River.
I know. Is it ready for swimming yet? There was like 2050 or 2045.
I think you usually wait till Memorial Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know, what do you get? A tetanus shot? A hazmat? Spray down?
All of it.
What is the procedure after being in the Chicago River?
Well, first you're going to you're just going to stink like heck. What do you have to do to wash that stuff off?
Mm-hmm.
Yuck.
All right, so as you'll recall in Titanic, they had to hold on to a cabin door, and then he was felled by the iceberg. But in the Chicago River, it's a gigantic fecal grease ball.
Oh, you don't see that stuff anymore.
And a dead body.
That's
just
so
hold
three
on.
Years
one,
ago.
One arm.
Hey, they pull you out, and there's a dead body clutching to you already as you're being pulled out.
Hey, you better tell dispatch we got another one.
Yeah. They float to the surface at times like this. Oh.
There's also like a goose in the video just staring at him like... Yeah. Dude, your boat's going down.
And the goose makes no move to help. It just looks annoyed.
You know, like a goose is going to help. Like a goose is going to immediately go, you know what I got to do? These people have been shooting at me, and they've been doing everything they could possibly do. I'm going to help this guy? I don't think so.
Well, but you would think, the commotion would have caused the goose or the bird, whatever it is, to take off. But you'll see in the video.
It just calmly sitting there.
It's a city goose.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Not another one.
I've seen everything.
Normally, this happens after midnight on New Year's.
It was funny walking through the park over the weekend, and I saw a couple of ducks walking their ducks.
The little ducklings
like across a street.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And I kept thinking of what, and they were going away from the water, and I'm thinking, I get this, because they're worried they're going to end up on a menu somewhere, so they've decided to go act like a pigeon. Like to mom and dad, like, all right, we're going to act like a pigeon, everything's going to be cool, let's walk across the street.
Right. Those fancy lakefront dining destinations.
Yes. But then I saw this goose family with their little goslings.
Oh.
And I was walking right next to the docks, like a diversity. And so they're on my right side, the water's on my left. And all I could think about at that moment is, oh my God, I am approaching a mom and dad goose.
Yeah.
And then all their little, babies, little furry, fuzzy babies. And I'm thinking, this mom is going to try to kill me now, and I'm going to end up in this water. And we walked right by, and they just kind of moved out of the way, and they're like, okay, yeah.
They didn't bother you.
It is amazing how the geese here, the Canada geese, are so...
tolerant.
Like, in the city, like on a golf course, they come after you.
Right.
But, like, in the city, they're like, hey, we all got to get along. So it's like...
It's true.
I think after the whole foie gras thing, I think there's kind of a mutual respect.
Yes.
When Mayor Daley kind of... tried to, you know, there was a ban and there wasn't a ban. I think after that, they kind of realized, all right, let's all get along here. Nobody needs to be on the menu.
It's kind of a sanctuary city now for the geese.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
You know, they're okay here.
Kind of
they're going to protect us.
They feel it. Just don't make eye contact.
Yeah, I didn't. I walked, you know, sort of steadily. I kept my distance. I was, you know, on one side of the line, and they were there. And, you know, I just didn't want to make any eye contact with the... I figured if I was looking ahead and moving with dispatch, then, you know, I don't know, the mom or the dad, I don't know who comes after you in that situation. But, you know, whoever that would be, you know, would be like, all right, this one's okay.
So, Ro, for you, though, back to the capsized boater.
Yeah.
What is the bigger kind of tragedy? If that were you,
okay,
would you be upset about being, you know, about your boat capsized, or would you be upset that you were in the river?
Okay, let me just tell you the story.
I know my answer.
When the river flooded, remember this?
Yes.
When the river, there was a piercing of the bottom of the river, the riverbed, right at the bend where it turns into the South Branch, and there was a piercing of it with when they were driving pylons down into the river, and it went into a tunnel system that was not on the map that the contractors had, and it flooded a bunch of businesses and basements downtown, including City Hall, the
Marshall Fields.
It was a big, big, big deal. So I was a baby DJ back then, and they sent me out there's a landing where everybody was doing media, and I went out in a scuba suit and a mask with flippers to do a radio stunt. So I'm standing
very
out
sensitive
there.
Of you. The loop was shut down, by the way.
Right.
You're doing a stunt.
So I'm out there. The first day I went out there and did it like as a reporter, and nobody cared. And then the second day I said I'm putting on a scuba suit, and I did, and I made the trade papers. Anyway, the point is this. That I'm standing there, and I got water on my feet. And they literally, the City Department of Health sent a van out, you know, one of those, like, those kinds
of...
Mobile health things that, you know, where they're trying to give needles to heroin addicts and condoms to hookers, right? It's like that thing, that van that went out. That was standing out there in out by this thing, and it was treating all the press people who had any contact with the water.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, well, I didn't have any contact. Did your feet get wet? I go, yeah, they had to get a tetanus shot.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
A tetanus shot.
They
just
gave
for your feet getting emerged?
You couldn't come off of the dock without the doctors talking to you and saying, what did you just touch? Now, again, this is 25 years ago or 20, you know, it was in the early 90s. So it's, you know, maybe.
It's marginally cleaner now.
Yeah, maybe not as quite as bad now, but I still wouldn't want it now.
And do you remember what they used initially to try to plug the hole that they had caused there?
No.
Mattresses.
Yes, a classic Chicago thing.
Mattresses. So yeah, they just dumped a bunch of mattresses.
I got an idea. Yeah, let's throw some mattresses down there.
Honestly, like a flawed plan.
No, it was the craziest thing in the world. They called a mattress store. And they got pallets and pallets and pallets of mattresses.
The good news for taxpayers, it was President's Day weekend, so everyone got a deal.
Two for one.
And they dumped them all into there. And the funny thing about this was they thought, well, there was no plan to how to get them down there, except that they would float. And like anything, like in a drain, it would get sucked down into this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that plan didn't work.
No.
No.
Well, shocking. The mayor has a plan for the river, Chicago River, to be swimmable by 2030 and litter and odor-free by 2040.
I know. You go first.
They said by 2000 it was going to be, too.
Now it's 2030.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll tell you what.
2030 it'll be 2090. All right, I got to go. We got to go. Ben, we will see you on the WGN TV News at 4.
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. All right. Thank you, sir.
See you then.
Appreciate it. All right, there he goes, Ben Bradley.
The president does acknowledge meeting Stormy Daniels, correct?
Gee, I'm not really involved in the Daniels thing, so I don't know. I mean, he denies that it happened. She has written a letter denying it.
Well, we do have a picture of them together. So the president.
Well, it depends on what you mean by met her, right?
Well, yeah, there's the picture right there. I just want to get that fact on the table.
Well, it looks like my friend Donald Trump before he was president, and that looks like the woman who was on Saturday Night Live last night.
A.B. Stoddard joins us. My favorite few minutes of the week.
Yeah,
and I wanted to say, with lawyers like Rudy Giuliani, who needs prosecutors?
You think Mueller's just sitting back and saying, "No, just you know, let him talk."
Right,
I'm collecting a lot of info here.
I don't know if what are we to take from Rudy Giuliani's complete lack of preparedness here.
It's so interesting because if you watch the arc of sort of sitting down with Sean Hannity, deciding to release this bombshell that was, quote, intentional, it was their sneaky, shrewd strategy that he and the president had figured out, and everyone thought it was, you know, surprising and an accident, but no, it was planned, and he proudly told reporters that it was, and the next day, Trump sends out these tweets about how if you're rich or famous, you gotta have these arrangements, and you've just gotta be able to have a slush fund to pay back your lawyer, because that's how it goes. And he goes on Fox and Friends and makes it worse and says, basically it was campaign related and essentially an in-kind contribution, because he says, what if this is broken out on October 15th of 2016 in the middle of the last debate with Hillary, which would actually make a campaign finance violation, which apparently the whole scene the night before on Hannity was intended to define it not as a campaign finance violation. So it goes from there. It's the National Day of Prayer, and Trump watches all the coverage of this, and people have decided that the Fox and Friends thing made it worse. And then Trump gets cross, comes out on Friday and says, Rudy Giuliani's only worked here for a day, which everyone knows isn't true. He doesn't have the facts straight, which everyone knows is not true, because he's been dining with him and co-boosting him with him about this and making their plans to announce their rescue plan on TV. And he says he's going to have to get up to speed, but he's got it all wrong and he needs to get his facts straight. And then over the weekend, they talk. And Rudy gets some talking points, which he gave in the interview with George Stephanopoulos, which was otherwise a complete and utter disaster.
It was
without no collusion and no obstruction and all those dumb things that Trump is always saying.
I just want to point this out, AB. I now have been diagnosed with TMJ, with that pain in my jaw, because for five straight days, my mouth has been so wide open watching Rudy Giuliani on television. On Sunday morning, I'm standing in my kitchen, I'm making breakfast, and I've got, I got Stephanopoulos up. That's what I do on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. I go right from Sleepy Eyes Todd over to Stephanopoulos. Mm-hmm. And boom, I'm watching. I'm like, he didn't. I thought if he agreed to do a sit down on Sunday, it was going to be mop up Sunday.
You would think
he was going to have everything buttoned down. And he was going to avoid questions, and he was going to do it right, and he was going to be in fairly friendly territory actually with Stephanopoulos, because Stephanopoulos, you got the one thing you have to know about him, and I know that Cujo agrees with me. The one thing you know about Stephanopoulos is that he's been there. Mm-hmm. Right. So he does. There are moments where he doesn't actually twist the knife once it goes in. And that is, I thought he's going to let Rudy he's going to be respectful of Rudy. And Rudy even said that at the end. But Rudy had made such a mess out of it that I'm like, I can't. What is he doing? Why is he still there? Now, you have a piece.
It was so mind numbing. He actually said the words, I don't really deal in facts. I just deal with the law. I don't really deal with the facts.
I don't know the facts. Yes, right. Yeah, it's right. But in the present,
facts are irrelevant here.
There was a thing that last week that I saw from a deposition that the president was in when they were talking about it. You know, how would he deal with a Mueller deposition or, grand jury testimony or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that was fascinating to me was that there was in a deposition about another case when he was Citizen Trump, he was asked about his net worth. And they said, what is your net worth? And he said it was like, $5 billion. And at that point, it wasn't. And they said, well, how did you come up with that number? He goes, well, the things, they fluctuate. They go back and forth. And it's really about how I'm feeling.
What?
Yes.
Always about how he's feeling.
And he says that. That's his last sentence. It's about how I'm feeling. Yeah. Like, I'm feeling like it's $5 billion. Well, that is how he deals with the world.
That is it, always, and that's how he wants his voters to deal with. He just wants people to get a feeling that he helps convey to them, and numbers and facts, don't even look at them.
Right.
It's not a problem.
Well, having said that, now I just want to give a little credit, because this is an absolute must-read. AB's Real Clear Politics piece that appeared on Friday is called Don't Miss the Presidential Forest Fire for the Trees. And it points to this exact issue that we're watching the circus of this, and we're watching the trees on fire and the flames and the smoke. But there are real things in peril inside that forest right now that need to be discussed, because America's changing in we're paying attention to Rudy Giuliani, who's out there. But in the meantime, as you point out, Scott Pruitt, you know, he's got 11 separate investigations into his office at the EPA.
What? This is such an astonishing story, the Scott Pruitt story. I just can't get over it. I know, and having covered Washington as long as I have, this is one of the most unbelievable stories about Washington that I've ever watched, because he is such a flagrant abuser of the taxpayer dollar. He is so contemptuous of the responsibility and the accountability that he is supposed to take to that job. And he is literally still in it under 11 investigations, trying to trick out, you know, his office like James Bond, trying to, whatever he does, there's a new revelation every 3 hours. And the only reason that he's not getting fired is because they simply don't know how to handle one more opening. They don't want the chaos. And they literally, they know as well as you and I that we could have my high school students deregulate at the EPA. Anyone can do it. It is not rocket science. Some of it will get tied up in the courts and never happen. But basically, you can go down the checklist and start rolling back every rule. It's just not complicated. Anyone can do that. They don't need Scott Pruitt in there. But they keep him in there because the Trump administration is such a holy smoking bonfire of problems that they can't deal with yet another confirmation process.
Do you think Gina Haspel gets confirmed as director of CIA?
You know, I think it's so interesting that she got so spooked that she wanted to clear out even before her hearing.
Mm-hmm.
But I just feel that there's such sort of really general consensus. Again, I made this argument about Mike Pompeo. I think we all did that. You know, who the Democrats, who do they want if it's not Mike Pompeo? Do they want Corey Lewandowski to be Secretary of State? Because that's what you might get. And Gina Haspel has bipartisan support in the intelligence community and people that believe that she is eminently qualified, the exact kind of nominee that this position requires in the age of Trump, not a lackey, a crony, some pal from New York, someone who actually knows what's going on.
She's been there a long time.
Well suited to the position.
Yeah.
So I have this feeling that she'll make it through, because as much as the Democrats want to stomp their feet, they want her to be in the job. It's the vote no, hope yes crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I that's what I felt about Pompeo. I could be wrong, but that's what I think.
All right.
Interesting.
I want you, AB, to be best.
Okay.
You're now AB best.
Best.
It's missing a pronoun there, but we get it. We do.
At least an article. I mean, there's at least
be
an article.
Be your best.
Or be the best, or be a best. I mean, that's something. Any, I don't know. We're
be,
missing
be
something.
Be we best? No.
Be butt best, look, I would take right
I
now.
I think everyone is very pro-FLOTUS. We
yeah.
want her to go.
Yes. Oh, yes. We want her to be president. If it were, I'll tell you something. Yeah. If it were legal for her to be president of the United States, which, of course, would be greatly ironic, I would make her president of the United States.
Everyone would be on board.
Yeah. Oh, no question about it. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. All right, A.B. Stoddard. All right. All right. Right now, let's check with Judy. Find out what's coming up at the bottom, at the top of the hour.
The Trump administration says, no thanks, John Kerry. We'll tell you more at 4.
That's an excellent tease. All right, here we go. Here is Violetta Pattermanic with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots. It's Rokan Show with Anna DeBlasis right here on 720 WGN. Tom Skilling joins us right now.
Happy Monday, guys.
Happy Monday, Tom.
So, Ro, did your horse win? Anna, have you talked to Ro about that at all?
Yeah, I think you did okay, but you said that had you only taken some of the advice that was shared amongst the experts
well,
on this program,
I'm just reading this right
we all
now.
Would be a little richer this morning.
I am just reading. I did take the advice, the trifecta. I did. I made it into a two-horse as opposed to three-horse bet, which cost me some money. So we had Eddie Olczyk and Ron Majors on the show with us on Thursday, and we went through all of
this. It doesn't give any better than that.
No, that's true.
And then what I did is I distilled it into a buddy of mine called me. I got a ton of calls on Saturday morning. Everybody wanted to know, like, what to
what
do.
You got?
What do you got? And so I gave them the top three racers. I said bet it in any order because you just don't know which way it's going to come in. But then I was just reading this because a guy that we all kind of know that works in an executive suite that runs this whole thing texted me on Saturday morning and wanted to know what was going on. And I just realized I want to go back through this, make sure I got this right. I actually gave him the Superfecta, which on a 10-cent bet, well, on a $1 bet, paid $19,000.
Wow.
Gosh.
Wow.
And I didn't use my own. By the time I was done betting on everything on Saturday, I had forgotten my own advice. But it's right here. It's right here what I wrote the guy. And I'm like, I'm an idiot. How does that happen?
Yeah.
Ro, are you ready for a dumb question? What's the difference between a superfecta and a trifecta?
Top four. Top four is superfecta. Ah, top three is trifecta. Okay. Exacta is the top two.
Gotcha. Right.
The trifecta is the top three.
Yes.
Superfecta, top four, which is an incredibly tough bet.
Yes.
But in this case, you did have it. See, you told us about it.
See, you were so busy making money for everybody else that you forgot about yourself, you know?
He's selfless that way, Tom.
I know. Mm-hmm. He's so giving.
Okay, so I said, looks like a speed track, because that's what I was told by our people who were there that morning, which means that the people in the front tend to win.
Yeah.
Right? And that it would be Justify, Magna Moon, Audible, Good Magic. By the way, it was Justify, Audible, Good Magic, which were the top three. And with long shots, Enticed and Noble Indy on the bottom, which means that you put in the fourth place, you choose, there's a certain way you do this bet that makes it a little cheaper for you to do, but you don't box them all, but you take the top three that you think are going to be the top three, and you bet them to be the top three, and then you take a couple other ones and you put them in fourth.
Now, can I ask another question that's along the lines of Tom?
It would have been $19,000.
You would have gotten $19,000
on a $1 bet.
Wow.
Gee, and you wouldn't have bet a dollar knowing you. So, well, that's a lot of money, Ro. You left out there.
Yes.
But you helped others, and just knowing that will make you happy.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he's, you can tell he's just busting out all over with the happiness.
You know, when he came in today, he was beaming.
I know.
Very pleased. He's helping so many people.
I know. I tell you.
Improving their lives.
He gives and gives and gives. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Seriously, Ro. I mean, that's got to be horribly frustrating.
I know.
Our own Kevin Powell, or as he's known here now, K-Pal. K-Pal. Kevin Powell, he was the first one to thank me. That was a very nice.
Yeah, sent a nice little quick thank you note to Ro. That's all, because it was like a nice little bonus from the boss in some ways. That was a nice little when you can go out, when you can leave a weekend with more money in your pocket, because weekend you're always spending money, you're out, you're doing stuff. More money in my pocket this morning than I did Friday. So thank you to Ro.
That's good.
So
Kevin,
what did you end up doing? The trifecta?
Yeah, I did the trifecta.
Okay.
Yeah.
How cool.
So Kevin, when are the dinner invitations celebratory dinner invitations coming to all of us?
They're in the mail, Tom. You should be expecting it any day now.
It's funny how that branch of the mail just keeps biting.
A nice night out at McDonald's. Only the dollar menu for everybody.
I see.
So the trifecta, this tells you what a wuss I am. The trifecta paid $141 on a $2 bet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty
good. Still pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good, right?
Right.
So what I did is I decided, I got a little nervous with my own, about myself. Mm-hmm. So I decided just to take those three horses and put them in an exacta. So it didn't matter which order they came in. If two of those three ended up winning first and second place, then I was a winner. And I was. It was $61 on a $2 bet. But it was still great. That's still great. But it dug me out of all the other damage I'd done in the races leading up to the Kentucky Derby. So that was my happiness right there.
So
how did all the rain? I heard this was the wettest Kentucky Derby on the books. Is that right? Over 3 inches of rain?
Yeah. It was a most amount of rain in the shortest period of time there. They've had like where 2 or 3 day rain there. Combined. But in the hours leading up to the Kentucky Derby, it was the most rainfall they've ever had during the race day. And what they do a thing where they run tractors over with these gigantic like wood pallets on the back of them. And it squeezes the track down. So there was a turf race. There was about an hour and 10 minutes between the last dirt race on the dirt track and the Kentucky Derby, as they ran a turf race on the turf course, the inside grass course, in between. Inside Grass Course, interestingly enough, was still very firm despite the rain.
Wow. Hmm.
So they
yeah,
think
because they had 3 inches of rain. I heard
right.
That.
Right, yeah. But apparently the way that it spread out, it wasn't pooling, it wasn't, you would know more about this part than I would, but the moisture content of the rain, even though it was 3 inches of, you know, of till accumulation, the way it came down, they were able to seal the track, is what they call it, where they run the tractors over with the wood on the back. They sealed the track, and when the race was over, the jockeys and the horses also reported that it was much firmer than they thought it was going to be.
Interesting.
But it's really fascinating when you see the horses come across. You saw the first and second horse, which were leading the whole way,
you
totally clean.
It. And then I was pointing that out to my daughter. I'm like, look at how muddy they are. They just kicked up so much mud. They look like they were covered. Like, how could they? How annoying that must have been for them.
Can you imagine the jockeys having that mud splattering on their
So what they do
masks?
Is jockeys wore on a race like that, each one of them wore 16 goggles.
Jeez.
And the goggles, you know, they're all the same shape, and they're built to, like, cone over each other.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you, and they're, it's a really interesting piece of technology. And so what they do in a race like that is they grab it and they just pull it down and it dangles around their neck.
Wow.
So every
while they've got their hands on the reins, they stop for a second to pull goggles down.
Well, they don't stop.
They stop their hands from touching the reins. They move them to their goggles.
Well, the way they jockeys are some of the most amazing
athletes. Yeah.
We never think about them because, well, you're just riding on the horse.
I know.
No, you're not. First of all, you're not riding on the horse. You're crouching in a yoga pose, essentially, over the horse for that 2 minutes. You do not, your butt never touches the horse. So you're crouching, so you got these incredible thigh and you know, haunch strength right there. And then you've got incredible forearm strength because those are 2,000-pound animals that they're steering, and sometimes the animal doesn't want, you know, the horse does not want to go necessarily where the jockey's telling him to go. So you have to be able to do that. And then, well, you see what they do, where they hold only with one hand at a time because they, you know, they have the whip on one side, and then they're pulling down the goggles.
It just seems like they're busy. Like, how would you be able to do that?
You know, I would imagine, too, the animal can read the jockey having you know, and so they probably have kind of a interesting communication between themselves.
And jockeys, I mean, the way they're trained, the horses speak a certain amount. You know, there's a certain kinds of verbal or audible commands that horses get used to hearing. But they're also being steered by the knees of the jockey themselves, by the legs.
Yeah.
As they're squeezing them and leaning up on them. And then when they stand up, when the jockeys, you know, kind of, you'll see them at the end, they straighten out their legs. Mm-hmm. That's when the horse knows the race is over.
Wow. That's interesting, yeah.
Well, there's so much strategy in it, too, about when to make their move. I think that that's, the, you know, the key to
really cool.
Positioning your horse. It is very cool.
It's really cool. And what they do, right. And so, they talk to the trainer or the owners before, and they work on a strategy based on, you know, who their horse is, what the strengths and weaknesses of that horse are, and given the conditions, and who the other horses are in the race, and if they've had a race with, you know, there's been a couple, like Bolt Doro and Justify were in the Santa Anita Derby together. So this was, they both knew each other, and they had strategies around how to race each other for the trainer and the jockey. The horses didn't talk about it, I don't think. Not the last I could tell. But they have a whole strategy of that, and then working the whole thing out. Now, I just want to say this before we leave this subject.
Yeah.
Justify, I want people to remember this. Justify, this horse, which did not race as a 2-year-old, and is the first. Now, this is a 3-year-old race, okay? So this is, and these are, horses do not start racing until they are 2 years old. That's the first.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
They're barely fully grown at 2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, they're about fully grown.
What is the lifespan of a horse?
It depends. I mean, it can go up to 20, 22 years, or even longer. But I think the average is around 18.
Wow.
But racing as a racehorse, really about 7 is about the you know, sort of the end of the career.
Sure.
So a 3-year-old is equivalent to like a college athlete. So you're watching like the NCAA championship basketball athletes. You know, these are about to make it into the pros.
Yeah.
That's what these 3-year-olds are doing. And so this 3-year-old season for them, and every horse turns whatever age they're going to be on the first of the year. So they may chronologically be 2 years and 11 months old, or 2 years and 10 months old, or whatever, when they're on that track. But they're considered, or I'm sorry, 1 year and 10 months old. They're considered to be 2 The first year you're born, and they're mm-hmm. generally all born in the spring, sometime between February and May, is the way that that works.
Mm-hmm.
Then those horses, when it comes around to January 1st of that first year, they're a yearling. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter, even though they might be 8 months old or 7 months old. They're called a yearling because they're already one on January 1. Then the next year, when they're a year and 9 months old, they're called two-year-olds. And we don't actually count what the birthday is. Am I explaining this?
Yeah, you are. This is fascinating.
But the interesting part about this justifies that it did not race as a two-year-old. I think it seems strange because it didn't have experience, but then it won all of the races that it ran as a three-year-old.
Four in a row, yeah.
Yeah.
So it started running as a three-year-old. So you got to remember, it started running in January,
mm-hmm.
had four races. It ran, and this being the fifth actually race. I have to look that up. I have it here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first horse since the 1880s to have not run as a two-year-old. Because you run in these prep races as two-year-old. It starts in the spring, summer of their two-year-old year.
Yeah,
and then they head off, these elite horses head off to the Breeders' Cup in November of their two-year-old year, and then they're placed in a couple different races in and around that festival, and then you get a good idea. And they gain points by being in these big races.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it drops. So all the horses there have earned their way in to the Kentucky Derby,
mm-hmm.
but now when you go to the Preakness and to the Belmont, there will be horses that are not qualified with points to be in those. Because a lot of these horses that were in the Kentucky Derby, they're going to pull them off because they qualify for the Kentucky Derby. They're going to pull them off and do other stuff with them and, you know, race them in some other races, try to get a couple of other stakes wins, and then send them off to become sires.
Interesting. Yeah. How did you learn? How did you get into this?
My family was involved when I was a kid.
I see. Because I know you have a real interest in this, and you clearly have a real knowledge of this whole thing. And you don't acquire this reading a book. You know, this is a lifetime of knowledge. Very interesting.
Yeah,
bro.
It's a lifetime of heartbreak is really what it is. I'm not going to lie.
It's a little expensive and for a hobby, too, from what I understand.
Yeah, it's expensive whether you're a patron. As Ron Majors taught me when we were getting into this together, I mean, he's been in this his whole life, too, mm-hmm. essentially. He grew up around horses and you know, was always involved in horse racing in one way or another. But he said the fastest way to become a horse racing millionaire is start with $1 billion.
That's how it works.
Gee, that's funny. That seems to work in other businesses, too. You know? You know, my sister was quite the equestrian. She loved horses and all. And my experience with horses was when we went up to, you know, a YMCA camp, and they would have a horse there.
Yeah.
And I had quite a communication with my horse. You know, I'd say, giddy up. Let's go. That's it.
It's amazing what they know, though.
Oh, yeah. They're not dumb animals.
Oh, God, not at all. And when they're, and they know, and the thoroughbreds who are bred to race, they know what they're doing. It's funny. The trainers will tell you how quickly they learn based on sort of what the instinctive breeding is for them and how quickly they take to the game. They understand it and they get that their job is to be faster than the guy behind them, because that's a natural thing. They do this in the fields by themselves, you know, just as, you know, without being in the business. You know, that's what they would do, that, you know, all day long. We watch, too, with yearlings, as we watch as they grow up,
mm-hmm.
how they race each other in the fields,
mm-hmm.
which is really interesting to watch.
I bet it is.
Yeah, they're fascinating. They're great. It is a great sport, it is a great thing to watch, and it is a great industry. There's 20,000 jobs in Illinois alone related to horse racing. It is, and I got to tell you, I've been around, like I said, my whole life, and almost everybody I've ever been involved with, for sure, but I have very rarely ever seen horses being mistreated in this.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, they do get it. They love racing. That they do. So
I believe it. It's like the Iditarod, you know, and a lot of people fear that the dogs are mistreated. And there's a compassion between the sled dog owners and breeders and the dogs themselves that is really quite noticeable.
That's why, you know, gambling, you know, people are like, oh, well, gambling. It's hard to fall in love with a pair of dice. But you can fall in love, you know, with these horses, and you can appreciate what they are and with the athletes that they are, the athletes that the jockeys are,
mm-hmm.
and the amount of people and work and showmanship that goes into putting on the show for us.
Yes.
You know, it is really an amazing thing. All right, we got to run.
I know. Right, well, very interesting, Ro. We've learned some things
here.
Thank
you,
Tom. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, hey, guys, Tom. Happy Monday and 80 tomorrow. So woo-hoo! How about that? I know.
There you go.
Be great.
All right. See thank you very much. All right, Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour? This is another way to sell the Sherry's Berries right there.
Gotta love your mama.
Yeah. All right. Let's listen. Maybe you want to send your mama something on the interwebs.
Mm-hmm.
You want to send her something maybe from one of these websites. Oh, you know, like maybe Amazon. I want to talk about this only in real terms of I know Amazon's not coming to Chicago before I say any of the things I'm about to say. But it turns out that Jason Knowles and the kids over at the ABC 7 iTeam,
mm-hmm.
the consumer division, they have I've been to the iTeam office. They have mm-hmm. a wall in between. You got Gowdy and, you know, chasing mobsters and politicians.
That's right.
And then on the other side, it's the iTeam uh-huh. ordering a bunch of stuff online and figuring out which is fake, which is very interesting. It's exactly what you did.
Yeah, the dual iTeams.
Yeah.
Double iTeam.
Good to have a lot of investigative people in this town.
Yeah.
Love that.
That is true.
There's plenty of work.
plenty to do, that's for sure, right?
That is true. If you can walk 5 blocks in this town and not find a major story, you are not doing your job.
True.
Let's talk about this, because, you know, I've long suspected this. Even stuff I've ordered from Amazon that has come, most stuff is great. And most stuff is exactly as advertised. But there are things I know I have gotten that are not the original product. Right. And I can't really exactly figure out because they come in the packaging, and I don't know if I should send it back or not.
Well, and it's so hard to tell when you're online because, first of all, it's a picture.
Yeah.
Second of all, is it even the real picture? I mean, anybody can put any picture up that they really want to, especially when you're dealing with all these third-party sellers.
Right.
And even when it's Amazon Direct or you know, anything really on eBay's third party, you may not really know unless you go directly through a manufacturer.
So what did you guys find?
Well, here's what we did. So this all started when we actually were talking to the folks at George's Salon in the Gold Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And they were sounding off, ooh, ding, sounding off an alarm. That was perfect timing. to their customers, because a lot of their customers were going online, whether it be eBay, Amazon. There's plenty of other online spots to do. Mm-hmm. It's not all Amazon.
They look for beauty products?
Yeah, they look for beauty products, because a lot of these beauty products are high-end, and mm-hmm. you want to save money. Who doesn't want to save money today, right? And it's convenient to get it to your doorstep.
Right.
So the salon was sounding off an alarm because they were being told by their vendors that a lot of these items people are getting online, mm-hmm. either they can possibly be expired or old, or they're not the real thing. And so we wanted to find out more about this, and we found the counterfeit report. And they're out of L.A. Wow. They're near the L.A. area. And we went there, and it was shocking when I got there to see a table full of fake items from online. And this was a mix of places. It's not all Amazon. There's some Amazon, yeah. some eBay. A lot of it was actually eBay because of the third-party sellers, which eBay is only third-party.
I've had some problems of not getting at all what was advertised, not at all. Like, I ordered 20 hair products, which, funny you say this, and they sent one, even though I paid for 20. And they eventually took care of it, but it was a nightmare to deal
with. Well, and it is important to mention, before we get too deep in this, that both Amazon and eBay and all the sites say that they aggressively yeah. combat the bad actors. I mean, they have people out there looking, and they say scouring for these people who are fake. And you also have money-back guarantees. I mean, people can get their money back if you think you've gotten a fake.
So where were the problems, though? Were these designer brands? Were they like handbags and perfumes and things like that with the names that we would recognize, or that was just across the board, all kinds of products?
Well, there was some Giorgio Armani. We also found Marc Jacobs perfume, and they look so real. You'll see it tonight side by side. It looks real.
Can't
you wouldn't
tell.
Be able to tell, even not even from the online picture, but even when you get it, it looks real.
Ro okay, can tell.
I'm able
to tell.
I'm embarrassed to say this. But then again, that happens about 4 times an hour on this program. So it was a hair product that I know I got. Two things I know I got ripped off on. One was a hair product.
That's funny that we all have hair product experiences.
It was like, you know, because I have a very, I think people know, long-time listeners and viewers know that I
care about your hair.
There's a lot of product in this hair.
And you have good hair.
Yeah, I gotta take care of your hair. You gotta make that hair. You gotta listen. It's the moneymaker, pal. That's the only reason I still stay on television.
You still got it.
Yeah, I still got the hair. Anyway, the point is that I use this a very specific brand, and I use two brands together, and I combine them and make my own little deal, which I should just go out and start telling. Uh-huh. Anyway, so it's like the kind of a goopy stuff that you put on your hair.
Yeah,
not to be confused, of course, with Gwyneth Paltrow. So I got this thing, and it's in the same container. But it's an orange container, but the orange is just a little off. It was like more of a burnt orange than an orange.
Right.
And then I opened it up, and it didn't have the little plastic that's normally over it.
Oh.
And then I stuck my finger in it.
Mm-hmm.
And my finger went all the way to the bottom of the goopy jar almost instantly. And it shouldn't have done that. There should have been some pushback there.
It's a different consistency that you're totally expecting. Different,
right. It was a thinner consistency. And I'm like, all right now. All right.
And you caught him.
Yeah, okay. Here we go.
So did it put it in your hair and it did something funky to it?
Well, it didn't do the same thing. So, and I don't know, and even out, but you see, here's the problem. I cannot find this product in a store anymore. I think to the point you are making here, and the salons have this point, like you go to a salon to buy a hair product, they have only the ones that they're carrying. Right, and even if they had the old ones, they don't have the new. They're like, oh, we changed. We don't carry that anymore.
Right, and at the salons, I guess they're even the high end products. They're actually changing the labeling all of the time to combat some of the fakes.
Right, so you don't even know. Sometimes it's not the same thing.
Right.
So now, and I don't know what. And so what I started doing is I got rid of that one. Then there were others that seemed more like the real one. I think I still don't think I'm getting the right one. So that's why I'm now creating my one with. Where I'm putting two together, and I've decided this, that I am going to get a hold of the counterfeiters, and I'm going to propose that we go into a legitimate business together, and that we combine these two products, and then we go out and sell it.
And then together you can scam the public.
Yes. Well, no, this would be a legitimate. I want to go legitimate.
But you're using a knockoff and mixing it with the real product, then you're automatically part of the scam.
Well, no, I'm like the Corleone family is going to be completely legitimate in 5 years. All right, so now they do stand by this, but it is. Can you send anything back for any reason to Amazon? I guess you
know
can.
They're really good about it, and eBay as well.
eBay
you can,
too.
You can send things back. You can call, and they have money back guarantees. So you know we're going to talk to you about a lot of little things you could look for in these products.
Yes,
to actually stop the fake. I mean, there's small things like little lines in the A of the Mac makeup, or you can maybe see a seam in the bottle of the Marc Jacobs perfume. If there's no seam, it's safe. So you got to really like look out for these things for each product. So really what you need to do if there's one product you like is you have, if you really want to get it online and then maybe go one time into the store and then hold it up next to the real one.
Oh my gosh, what a lot of work.
And then you'll know.
And then you
keep getting it from the same person online.
Oh, okay. Then you keep ordering it from them. Because if you order in time for mom, it seems like once you inspect it and send it back, you might not have a gift anymore. Like,
well, right.
It takes some time.
Right. You have to do a little bit of homework.
I think it's interesting, though. You talk about this. The product itself is, and sometimes they get into the stores, too. I mean, there are, you can go to not salons necessarily, because salons are dealing with, they should be at least dealing with distributors who are doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes there's stores that, do like discount kind of things. Mm-hmm. And I mean, how do we know what we're getting ever from these folks?
Well, and we're not talking about the other stores as well, but we did hear that from some of the experts that some of these items, especially the beauty products, could potentially get into grocery stores or maybe like some of the discount stores.
Yeah.
And the biggest concern there is, are the products expired?
Right.
And do they really even
okay,
work?
Okay, so I guess so.
And maybe fake too.
So I got coffee from that I got on the Amazon too, and and it was, I think it's the real product. It's hard to tell because the packaging is a little different. It's missing a stripe on it.
And
when I opened it up, it did not taste like the stuff that I had been buying. And then I looked in, and it did not have an expiration date on it, and they all do. So I'm like, all right, now
how old is this stuff?
Where are all right. It's the worst feeling in the world to just feel like you've just gotten scammed.
It
isn't
is.
It?
Oh, yeah. Because you're like, oh, man.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest thing to remember is if it looks like too good of a deal, and we say this a million times about all of our stories.
It probably
But if it looks
is.
Too cheap, it probably is not the real thing. If you have a funny feeling about it,
but online,
stay away.
I think a lot of scammers also price competitively.
They do, actually. And that's part of the story, too, is they're actually now raising the prices because they think that people are catching on to if it's too cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So then they'll raise it just enough
right.
that they're below,
so
undercutting everybody
undercut,
else.
But not too cheap.
Itching.
Oh.
Yeah.
The sun's...
I know.
But, it's, you know, so go right through the manufacturer, too. That's another thing that you can do. And we're going to have more tips tonight.
Well, some of those guys are really expensive,
show you some
though.
Of the products.
Sick and tired of those guys, yeah. too. Taking
who
all
wants to pay full price?
Right, exactly.
But you can even go through the manufacturer on Amazon.
Okay, now that's interesting, because when you go on Amazon will, you know, like there's Amazon Direct, which is where you're buying from Amazon's warehouses, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. But then when they're hooking you up, because Amazon's also a hookup site. It's basically the Tinder of hair goop. It is. They will.
Fulfillment by Amazon you have as well.
Right.
And you don't always know where that's coming from.
Well, I think if they fulfill, though, shouldn't they have a higher responsibility
to
this?
The manufacturers send their goods to Amazon's fulfillment centers. Then they have them.
Right. Then you would know the provenance of it. But sometimes they hook you up with a guy in New York. It's always a guy in New York. It's like, you know, there's always like an electronics company in New York that will sell you this thing at like, you know, half price. And I think you really want to make sure that you're dealing with that there's a chain of custody here that makes sense. Right. So that
right.
Amazon, that this came from, that, you know, Amazon ordered it directly and got it from somebody else. Not they sent you to a store, you know, in the Garment District of New York, and then you're getting it. You know, it,
right,
from them,
if,
from
if
the
it's
store.
A third party, your risk is potentially higher.
Yeah.
But it's important to mention Amazon and eBay are also saying that this is just really not happening that often. That's mm-hmm. what they claim. The
yeah,
counterfeit
okay.
report, which you can go to check out their website, too. They would disagree because that's basically they're hired by manufacturers
mm-hmm.
to scour all these online websites.
For the
and
fake
they're,
products.
For the fake products. And they're claiming to find these fakes on several different sites all the time, and then they report to Amazon or eBay and say, hey, take this down. This isn't real.
All right, when am I watching this tonight? 10 o'clock?
10 o'clock tonight.
On ABC7.
ABC7.
Oh, I am all over this.
I am too. I'm watching that.
I'm ordering popcorn. I'm going to mm-hmm. sit. I'm going to go to the store.
Go right to
popcorn.
Garrett's yeah. or wherever you go, whatever
and,
you do.
And right now, on my Facebook page right now, ABC7,
yes.
Jason Knowles, ABC7, mm-hmm. we actually have another piece with some of the items that are actually not included in tonight's story.
Okay.
That's already on my page. So you can watch it right now. You'll see all the items.
All right.
A bunch
man,
of them.
Man, oh man.
All right. I wonder if my hair goop is on your...
I know.
Yeah.
Electronics is another big one. Headphones, electronics.
TVs.
Batteries,
and that's
TVs.
Bad because those things will go bad on
right.
you if they're not the brand.
And memory cards. And that's bad because you think you have like, let's say 16 GB. Well, it may only really have 8. And then when it gets to 9, it just all erases.
Oh, gosh.
Oh,
the
worst.
Oh, don't get mom that for Mother's Day.
Electronics and beauty products.
Now, Jason, you didn't give your mom any of the stuff that you bought. You know, that's all I kind
mom?
Of... Man,
my
look
mom,
what I got for you.
She's coming soon, so I'm just going to get her a gift here in Chicago.
That's a good idea.
I'm not going to send her
just go bricks
send
and
her
mortar.
A card.
Go bricks
and mortar. Go bricks and mortar. Show up. You
get
know.
Her a spa day.
No question.
Nice. Yeah.
No question.
Moms love that.
All right. Thank
I
you very much.
That.
Appreciate it. Jason Knowles. See him tonight. ABC 7 tonight on the I-Team at 10 o'clock. Right now, Judy Pilak is in the WGN radio newsroom telling you what's coming up at the top of the hour. Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
It's our favorite time of day, Ro.
It is.
My favorite time of day.
It is. Because
it's after 5 o'clock.
Right. That means work ends. And it kind of does for us anyway right around here because we do
sort
the
of stop thinking.
Yeah, we do the top five and then a lot of the other kind of stupidity kicks in. Listen to this.
What?
Coming up at 5:40.
Yes.
We're going to take a little trip down musical memory lane. Some of the acts from the Ravinia Festival season.
Oh, it looks so good this year. Well, it has for many years, but this year.
Will be on display here. This is going to be very interesting.
Hmm.
Interesting. And they're doing something I never thought I would see at Ravinia this season.
80s night?
Nope.
Because I'm
50 Cent.
50 Cent.
50's in the house.
Yeah.
Finally, the people of the North Shore have been calling for 50 Cent to perform at Ravinia for years now.
I saw Vanilla Ice last year and Salt and Pepper.
Really? Well,
Vanilla. It was the I Love the 90s tour.
Yeah. Vanilla Ice is really quite a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He really has a strong fan base.
Like he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does. He's actually been on the show before. He's actually kind of genius about this. He's been able to stay relevant somehow, even in his irrelevance. He's been able to stay relevant.
I only know his Ice Baby.
Yeah.
And that's it.
He has turned that into old for the last, 20 years, 20-something years. Right? I mean, that Ice Baby is from, 92, 93, something
way
like
back,
that?
Way back, yeah.
Great year.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, the point is this. That they're
doing something they've never done before? Is that...
Well, it's good. It's a really interesting... 50 Cent is a pretty interesting... You never think,
pass the cheese and wine while we listen to a little 50 Cent.
Right. I mean, you have to bring your own candelabra to...
Is 50 Cent going to go a little more like Ravinia-esque? Or
I don't think so. No, we can do some Tony Bennett numbers? I don't think so.
I don't know. Slow it down a little bit. Maybe he's got a ballad I don't know about.
It's really fun. It's really fun. I like the way they're thinking. It really made it into a really...
They do.
It's not... It is not your grandfather's Ravinia anymore. I can say that for sure.
No.
Not after 50 goes there.
This could be something. All right. We'll talk to them about it and play a little bit of music for you after 5:40. See what I said? It's weekend-y, isn't it?
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Okay, we do. Here we go.
Number five.
Melania Trump in the Rose Garden today, unveiling her Be Best initiative.
Yep.
Which is going to educate kids about many issues. She says that her campaign has three main pillars. Well-being, social media, and opioid abuse.
It concerns me that in today's fast-paced and ever-connected world, children can be less prepared to express or manage their emotions and oftentimes turn to forms of destructive or addictive behavior such as bullying, drug addiction, or even suicide.
Okay.
It's all, listen, anytime a first lady does stuff like this, I don't want to criticize first ladies because they, it's a tough enough job. She has maybe the toughest of all of the jobs, and especially given the perceived irony here, I would say I see it, of cyberbullying and given, her husband's, almost a dad, but it's about the same thing. Her husband's proclivity for wanting to be, tough in his online behavior toward his enemies, toward his political enemies. It just doesn't seem like it fits the presidency of the United States. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's ironic. But then wait, now there's more here. But Sarah Sanders was asked about this today and whether or not the president himself accepts any responsibility for why skeptics are criticizing this initiative by the first lady.
I think the idea that you're trying to blame cyberbullying on the president is kind of ridiculous when it comes to kids. This is something that has been problematic and something that we have seen over the last decade. And the First Lady sees it to be an important issue and something that she wants to address.
That's kind of a good pivot right there, but that's not what they were asking. They're not asking if he's responsible for cyberbullying. They're saying, is he a good example for kids on the internet? If she's going to take the position of being, of that cyberbullying is bad, should he continue to call people names on the internet?
Pick fights on Twitter and call people, pretty ugly names. It's hard to hear, too, but when she says things like, she wants people to use social media with compassion and respect, and too often it's used in a negative way, those are her words, you can only think of her husband. And I know you're talking about her husband tends to pick fights with other powerful people who can defend themselves, but children still see the example, right? Don't they see what's happening on social media, and they see the president of the United States and others? It's hard to separate the two completely.
The president has always punched down because he's the president of the United States. So no matter who he's punching at, even if he's Senate.
Yeah, but they tend not to be really, really weak people, right? I mean, sometimes, they tend to have a voice of their own. They're reporters, they're entertainers or something like that. I'm not justifying. I'm just saying that's what they're saying is this is amongst children. And she was asked about it today. And she says she basically said the irony is not lost on her and that she does understand that people do criticize her and she knows why, but she feels it's too important because when it comes to children, she's seen what it happens to kids who are cyberbullied. So she doesn't care that her, you know, her, there's criticism of her husband for the acting the way he does. I don't know that she excuses it or what she thinks of that. She didn't weigh in. She just said it's too important to excuse, you know, to not say this is important for children, kind of isolating them out of the picture.
All right. Well, we wish her the best in this. The be best.
Be best. I still think it's missing a pronoun. Be your best. Isn't that what it
should
be?
Or an article.
Article. The be best. The
best. A yeah. best. Be a best. Even be a best.
Be a best.
Would even be your. Would make more sense.
Be our guest. I don't know. I don't know. It's almost there. It's just,
yeah. No one ran that past her, though. And she was like, I don't know. I don't get it. But no one ever, like, there was nobody else in the White House who went, you know what? Wait. We should probably do be our best. Be the best. Be. Something's best, uh-huh. Be your best, all of that.
Be your personal best.
We should add another word.
Was she just translated it directly from Slovenian?
Which would have been?
With no the.
Right, because in Slovenian it would be, well, you wouldn't say be the best, you'd be, say be best, right?
Yeah.
And Violetta knows. That's,
she does.
She speaks.
She's the authority on the show for that.
As many languages as Melania does.
I don't, my dad does, so there's the genius.
Oh, God.
Number four.
Despite not yet having all his facts straight, that's according to the president, that Rudy Giuliani doesn't have his facts straight.
Yep.
Oh, boy. He made a mess, and I can't figure this out. We were talking about this with A.B. Stoddard before mm-hmm. on the program. I'm watching this on Sunday morning, and I'm like, okay, here comes Rudy. I've always liked Rudy. I supported Rudy.
Mm-hmm.
Politically, I gave money to Rudy Giuliani's presidential campaign in 2008. I like Rudy. Always have.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost his frickin' mind. And I do not understand how it is possible. I don't even know how it is even conceived that they should have him going out and doing this. Because he's making it worse. He's walking the president into things that we are not even asking about. I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it.
When did the president first learn that Stormy Daniels wanted money to keep quiet about the relationship?
Don't know, and doesn't matter to me. What matters to me are two things. There are two relevant legal things, which is what my job is. Number one, it was not a campaign contribution because it would have been done anyway. This is the kind of thing that I've settled for celebrities and famous people. Every lawyer that does that kind of work has. And number two, even if it was considered a campaign contribution, it was entirely reimbursed out of personal funds, which I don't think we'll even get to because the first one's enough. So, well, case closed for Donald Trump.
Well, okay. You mentioned the second one then, right?
Well, a couple things. Even if it's reimbursed by Donald Trump, then is Donald Trump carrying that as a campaign contribution? Secondly, you know, there is something that's very interesting about this that I have not yet seen in the media. Now, I don't read all the websites because they scare me. But do you remember this campaign contribution was given the weekend of the final presidential debate?
Okay.
Do you remember the setting of the final presidential debate in St. Louis, Missouri? That Donald Trump had invited all of Bill Clinton's accusers to be in a room with him.
That's right.
Before the, just to get in Hillary's head, mm-hmm. right? And they put them in the audience.
And you noticed from the cutaways that former President Clinton looked visibly
right.
uncomfortable with
how,
the whole thing.
How uncomfortable would it have been if that day, or the following Monday, or the previous Friday, Stormy Daniels had popped up?
Yeah, it would have been.
Given that was their strategy, was to use Bill Clinton's girlfriends and then to have her pop up in the middle of this.
Yeah, I think the timing does, you know, it totally links up, but it just feels as if, how would you prove that this was not a personal, for personal reasons? To protect your family.
Well, because Rudy kept saying it's about the campaign.
That's the problem. Because you got your lawyer out there helping prove the other guy's case, the other side's case.
And that it was the campaign. And even if it wasn't, we can make the argument. Even if you want to say it was about the campaign, we can make the argument that he paid it back, it's okay. So, but it clearly does seem like it was intended to keep her quiet at a moment that politically they need it. Now, At the end of the day, that doesn't add up to much of a crime. It's a findable offense. It's not a big deal. As a matter of fact, most of this is not a big deal.
Right.
And I do think that Stormy Daniels going on Saturday Night Live and all the rest of it, I don't think that helps. And the president's approval ratings are as high as they have been, essentially, since he's been president. Not that they're great. They're still sitting around, you know, low to mid-40s, right? So that's still a 10-point differential for being, you know, he's got to, you know, he's got to move five up, and the Dems have to move five down, or the people who don't like him have to move down by five to get him to even, and that's going to take something. This seems to be his high watermark, but I think in part because of Stormy. I think in part because people are like, oh, so what? We all get it. Yes, he did, and they tried to cover it up, and he didn't want to embarrass himself, and the thing, well, we get it. This has nothing to do with the Iranian nuclear deal or the Chinese government or jobs or any of that. That is all true, and I think that people do actually believe that. So I think that the more Stormy stay, and they want to keep Stormy front and center right now because they know that that's working for them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, you know, after the last two things of having Judy running out for you and missing an article and Be Best, then I somehow giving them credit for thinking this out might be a little much, but I'm going to go with it. Right. We'll get to your three, your two, and your one. But first, Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour from the WGN newsroom?
Does she or doesn't she live at the White House?
Maybe it was, you know what would be best? I move out.
And how about who can blame her?
Right. Maybe that's what she meant. Maybe that was just be best was, maybe it'd be best if I move out.
That's the best explanation yet.
Maybe.
Then you have to say, be best.
Be best if maybe I go back to New York or maybe to Slovenia. I don't know.
Be best for me,
it would
for
be
you?
Best. It would be best for you, me, boy,
for
all
everyone.
Of it. It would be best. All right. Violetta.
And then there's this, of course. Fly to the front of the line at Lit Fest, June 9th and June 10th with a Fest Pass. Get yours today. Before they're gone, Printers wrote litfest.org/festpass.
All right, top five continues.
Number three.
Oh, this goof. West Virginia candidate for Senate Don Blankenship continued his crazy ad crusade today.
This is Don Blankenship, candidate for U.S. Senate. The establishment politicians are getting desperate and more hostile. They are calling me a bigot, a moron, a despicable character, and mentally ill. But even if all of this is true, I will do a better job than they have done. They have resorted to this childish name-calling because they don't want us to focus on the issues. The fake news is also pretending to be offended by my use of the words China people. They seem not to realize that China is a country, not a race. The establishment has given millions of our jobs to China people and left many West Virginia people to fend for themselves. Send me to the Senate, and I will represent West Virginia people, not China people. I am an America person, and I will put America first.
He's doubling down. Well, I mean, he's also a person who just served a year in prison for violations at his coal mine when 29 people died and safety violations were cited as part of the reason for that. He's on parole currently, and he hasn't given up his financial disclosures, which might be a parole violation. That could be an issue for him as well. Doesn't seem like the perfect candidate here. And his other Republicans running against him are saying he's unelectable. The president says he's unelectable, and he's calling himself Trumpier than Trump. There you have it.
Okay. Yeah, the president tweeted today.
Hey, so
don't vote for him.
We don't need another Alabama.
Right. But only because it's a bad, not because the guy's a moron, but because it's bad for me politically. All right, checking in at
number two.
Now, this is interesting. Roseanne and her new, and it sweeps now, so we're going to get some of the most interesting stuff coming out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Roseanne is going to teach tolerance and compassion in the next episode. She's having a Muslim family living next door to the Connors.
Mm.
And how they deal with that. And Roseanne, in the script, starts to fear that they might be building a bomb.
Get in here.
What?
You can't just stand on the front porch staring at your Muslim neighbors.
Anytime something bad happens, it's always somebody who lives next door to somebody.
Oh, my God, Mom. You have no reason to believe those people want to hurt you. They'd have to get to know you first.
This was supposedly her idea, and she really pushed for this issue.
All right.
So there you go.
That's why that
she's not afraid.
Let me tell you, that's why that show is popular and successful, because it's looking at this from both sides.
I think this is
not trying to shove something down your throat.
And she tackles the hot button issues head on. She's like, let's talk about it.
Right. It's a nice piece of impressionism, because it's looking at what's happening right there in front of you. And it's interpretation of what's going on, and that's why it is a hit. All right, and finally,
number one.
Well, then there was this.
What?
Stormy Daniels on Saturday Night Live.
So what up, girl?
Hello, Donald.
Come on, Stormy, stop making such a big deal about this. Everyone knows it's just an act.
I work in adult films. We're not really known for our acting.
Just tell me, what do you need for this to all go away?
A resignation?
Yeah, right. Being president is like doing porn. Once you do it, it's hard to do anything else. Oh, come on, we'll always have Shark Week. I solved North and South Korea. Why can't I solve us?
Sorry, Donald, it's too late for that. I know you don't believe in climate change, but a storm's a-coming, baby.
Ooh. Racy.
Yeah. I don't know.
When she come to Chicago, Ro, you still going?
Backstage passes.
Yeah, I got it right. All access. Oh, wait. No, don't say that. No. Oh, God. Oh, no. I just made it dirty. Oh.
The top five at five.
And they will be pulling into, along with Los Lonely Boys, which are, by the way, a different band.
Separate band.
As it turns out. And Ozomari? I don't know them. Nick Pelley is with us from this is one of my favorite things of the year, is when the tickets go on sale for Ravinia, because it just screams summer. Even if you don't plan on going to Ravinia this summer, which you should do, you should at least go once. But if you don't, even if you're like, I would never go, there's nothing that says summer like Ravinia, because it's like the whole, like a summer festival starts very soon, and then you just, it's warm weather, and it's a beautiful setting, and it's some of the greatest music in the world.
So
and
true.
All I have to say, you gotta go. You just gotta go. And Nick, every year, joins us to talk about what's coming up, and this is very interesting here, because it starts June 1 with Los Lobos, and then almost immediately, right after June 2, which is not almost immediately,
it
Nick,
is the next day, actually.
Trust me, Nick, I'll let you get a word in edgewise here some point. You get Diana Ross.
Can you believe it?
What an opening weekend! Or an opening.
You're doing all my PR for me, Ro.
You don't need me, Nick. You don't.
Soy Capitan. Soy Capitan.
Nice.
All right. So,
what the lineup again? Though you guys just continue to like beat every year. It's incredible. I'm looking here. You got not only the Diana Ross, you got the Anita Baker.
140 events from June 1 through September 16, including where else are you going to find 50 Cent and Tony Bennett on the same schedule?
I'd like to see them on the same stage. I think that would be one hell of a show right there.
Oh.
That would be a good show.
All right, can we talk about 50 Cent for a second? Because
sure.
That was like the big headline when you announced the schedule for this year, is it was going to be 50 Cent. And now it's interesting, 50 Cent is going back out on tour, and he's going to be, you know, like the summer, a lot of acts call this a shed tour, although Ravinia is a little bit different than a shed. Sheds are the kind of stadiums like the one down in Tinley Park or like Poplar Creek used to be. They're outdoor music, you know, outdoor music places all over the northern part of the United States, like all over the country. But you know, in the summer, the sheds up in the north, that's where, you know, a lot of summer tours go. Ravinia is a festival. Ravinia is a totally... it's a shed on steroids because of the experience that people have
and the number of people they're able to hear.
That's right. And, it's like we do 140 events, like I said. Every day is different. So imagine what it takes to load in all that lighting, all that equipment, all that stage stuff, just for a one-nighter. And then we're on to the next thing right away. It's really cool. And then, you know, we go from classical music with the Chicago Symphony all the way to people like Diana Ross and Mary J. Blige coming for the first time. She's one of 80 people making their Ravinia debuts this summer.
So, let's talk about 50 Cent, though. Because now, 50 Cent, is he doing like a shed tour? What kind of tour is he doing?
I'm not sure what else he's doing beside this date. I think it's right now he's putting together just some dates. I don't think it's too extensive.
Now, did he come to you or you guys go to him? How did that? I mean, what an interesting choice.
He came to us. In the last few years, we've been getting more and more daring when it comes to pushing the envelope in the hip hop arena. We've had some success. We had Common last year, and it got just rave reviews. So we want to make sure that people recognize that Ravinia is a place for all genres and all audiences.
I think that's cool that you've moved into more of an eclectic mix than you historically had been known for when it was more classical, maybe some pop, jazz, even some country.
You know, we were really daring back in the old days. And believe it or not, to have Benny Goodman back in the day, or even a Duke Ellington, was daring for a suburb in Highland Park. I mean, Benny Goodman, when he came to Ravinia, there was like protest because he had an integrated band.
Yeah.
So Ravinia always was a little bit more daring. Then we kind of got stayed a little bit in the 80s and the 90s, and now we're coming back with a vengeance.
Right. I mean, and nothing against Michael Bolton, but I mean, it's a different thing. I love Michael Bolton.
Love the Bolton.
All right, let's do a couple other ones here that we should mention. Seal is going to be playing.
Perfect.
Which
Ravinia Seal? Night.
I mean, here's a guy.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, if you want to get lucky after a concert, you got to buy Seal tickets. I'm telling you.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait, what a way to sell it. How about just enjoy great music?
Okay.
No.
For you, that's what I would. That's what. You know, your husband or boyfriend, you know, would say, you know, this, you're just going to enjoy, you're just going to have a nice night of enjoyment. But really, the guy knows what he's doing in a night like that.
That's an aphrodisiac.
He has a high-octane voice. In all fairness, there should be more than one child out there named Ravinia, if you know what I mean.
Oh,
I do, indeed. All right, now, explain this to me. Roger Daltrey, one of my favorites, of course, from The Who. Roger Daltrey.
Fantastic.
He's going to do two different nights here. It's interesting. He's doing, at least that's what it says in here, he's doing the music of Tommy, right?
That is correct.
And he's going to do the 23rd and the 25th with Janis Ian in between.
That is correct. He needs a night to rest his voice, then he's going to come back and do it again. And that one's selling really fast, so if you're interested in that, jump on that right away.
What about the 80s night? We've got the Flock of Seagulls, the Wang Chung, Men Without Hats, a bunch of it. And then you look and you see the Culture Club is playing and B-52s.
Yeah, two big 80s nights with multiple acts, and that's great. That's a sweet spot for us. Everybody knows that the music you listen to in high school is the music that stays with you for your whole life. Mm-hmm. So all these 80s kids, this is the place to be this summer.
Love that.
Well, by the way, can I just tell you that you keep playing the music here. 50 Cent?
Yeah. Why do you keep playing
this?
This
is not 50 Cent, but I want, because this is interesting.
What?
50 Cent this summer is right now the only dates that he has on his website is he's going from Ravinia on on the 5th and 6th, right? Or 6th of September?
He's late. Yeah.
He goes from Ravinia to Copenhagen. He's going to be in Brussels. He's going to be in Copenhagen. He's going to be in Rotterdam. He's going to be doing a Northern European tour. And then London and Manchester and Birmingham. How about that? How interesting
tour.
Is that?
That is amazing. So this is the shortest commute you will have to see all year long.
Way to sell it. I like how we're doing this.
That is really true.
We also have some non-musical acts, more performances like Whoopi Goldberg and Martin Short.
This is a great year for comedy. Whoopi Goldberg is making her debut. That's going to be really fun. We're going to have a big lawn screen out for that night like we do on the movie nights. We have Martin Short and Steve Martin together. We have Chicago's own Joey Villagomez is going to open for Los Tigres on September 16th. So we're trying to get into the laughter, you know, and bank on that audience because who doesn't want to laugh?
Is Earth, Wind & Fire, is this their first Ravinia stop?
No, this is, for this year, I'm not even sure, to tell you the truth.
No, but Earth, Wind & Fire, is this, have they been to Ravinia before?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They've been in Ravinia several times. You know, they were Earth, Wind & Fire started as a backing band for our own Ramsey Lewis.
Yes, oh. I knew that.
I did not.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Great
yeah.
piece of music and trivia.
There you go. I know one or two things, you see.
Yes, I know. Don't worry, I'll get to what you know and you don't know. And here's a show. There's a little show that I think people should go see.
Mm-hmm.
It's late in the season, but this is worth it. Johnny Rivers and Jimmy Webb. Mm-hmm. Johnny Rivers, two great songwriters who are... the thing is, they've written for so many people mm-hmm. over the years, Jimmy Webb especially. It's like a songwriter's night. And if you just want to hear the hits, to me, that's one of the more fascinating parts of the soundtrack of your life plays out in front of you. And you go, oh my God, he wrote that. Oh my God.
That one too.
And this is a venue where someone literally can leave the cake out in the rain.
Good point.
That is true, right? Yeah, they do actually. You got to run, but grab the candelabra and run with that because that could go away. I don't see.
That's right.
Well, you know what? It's so funny for 50 Cent. You're gonna have so many. Have a lot of kids
mm-hmm.
who I hate to keep going back to this, but I think it's. I actually don't hate because I think it's so fascinating. You make an excellent point, Nick, about what you know. Ravinia's, you know. It's dedication to art, and it's dedication to the art of music specifically. And it's there are going to be so many kids who would sit there, who sat out of Ravinia with their parents or their grandparents,
mm-hmm.
and have been like rolled their eyes at a great orchestral performance, and then to be able to go back and watch 50 Cent, right?
Oh, a little candy shop.
That's
oh,
amazing.
That's so short.
And we see that happen. And our hope is now, when that kid gets to be an adult, he'll bring his kids. It's
right.
The next big thing.
Exactly. Well, that's, I mean, let's say, you know what, the funny thing is, 50 Cent is turning into a middle-aged act.
Right, because he's almost 50, isn't he? If he's not.
Right. He's in his 40s.
They said on a Simpsons, it'll happen to you.
All right, tickets go on sale tomorrow for the entire Ravinia, well, the first half,
no,
the Ravinia.
June and July,
and then Thursday for August and September, right?
That's right. In the past, we've had some really long wait times and so forth, so we said, hey, let's split it up, because we're selling like 10 United Centers all at once. That's how many tickets we're moving. So we thought, let's do it on 2 days instead of one and see if that helps.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Good idea.
That's a good idea. And the lawn, they've upped their game at Ravinia. The,
food
is spectacular. The experience is spectacular. The, you know, the pavilion has always been, you know, it's a very comfortable space
mm-hmm.
to see a great show. There's no bad seat in the house. And then when you're out on the lawn, there's no, you know, the stars are out. It is just amazing. It's amazing.
It's a beautiful night.
Everybody should try it.
We get so few nice nights in the summertime. Why not spend it under the stars with some friends and wine and cheese? And the cool thing is, you know, even when you come in as strangers, by the end of the night, people are sharing cheese and stuff. You make friends here. It's
an
amazing social experience.
That is really true. And I gotta just think, I must see this. I uh-huh. must catalog this moment because
okay.
it is, you know, in a world that sometimes you go, I don't know if we're heading in the right direction. 50 Cent at Ravinia tells me we are heading in the right direction.
You're coming out for it, right?
Oh, for sure. I'm coming out for half these acts.
He's bringing the whole show. It's really nice.
Well, I would actually like to bring the whole show to this because this is real. That is, you know, it's a little later in the season, but it's definitely worth it. And you know, every year I come out and I see Jackson Browne, even though I get mad at him every year because he doesn't play his hits until the end.
I hate that when they don't.
But
to make you wait,
he sings a song about a whale, and you're like, hey,
I'm always singing on Metro. I can hear the song from the train.
And then Daltrey, of course, and you know, Bryan Adams would be a very, very fun show. But there's so many things. There's little things that, you know, I have to go out and expand my horizons here because I've never been to a show there, no matter what it was, mm-hmm. that I didn't absolutely love.
That's true.
By the way, when are we doing Tony Bennett?
Tony Bennett is late this year, September 8th, 2 days after 50 Cent. Tony Bennett is 93 and still sings like Tony Bennett.
Yeah, jeez. I say this every year. Go out and see him. You never know.
You don't want to miss it.
All right. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate
Thanks,
it, man.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks for the talk.
All right.
I'll see you soon.
So much fun. Ravinia.
Oh, it is.
Go see it. All right. Let's just Google it, and you get the tickets right there. Was it Ravinia.org, I think, is the official website. All right, right now, let's find out, Judy, very fast, what's coming up at the top of the hour? It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Chicago White Sox broadcaster Steve Stone joins us right now.
Hello, Steve.
To get ready for the week in White Sox. And how great, Steve. By the way, brought to you by, let me do this, brought to you by Let Us Entertain You Restaurants. Let Us Entertain You Restaurants serving the greater Chicago area since 1975. All right.
I was at Il Porcellino a couple of nights ago and tried a pasta benedetti, named after my partner, by the way. You'll love it. Jason loves it. And I think it's pretty good.
How cool.
Jason Benetti, I just got to tell you,
yeah,
is one of the greatest young finds in all of baseball. What an amazing announcer he is.
Well, I don't know if he would be the greatest announcer that any team could have anywhere in baseball, but I will tell you that he's the greatest announcer that the White Sox could have here in Chicago. Number one, he's going to get the Ford Frick Award way, way down the road because he's got a lot of years left, but he's just outstanding. Nobody prepares like him. He's got a great voice. He has a tremendous understanding of the game, and he loves the game. And so working with him has been a pleasure. His parents were White Sox fans before he was born. The family continues to be White Sox fans. It's just a great story out of Homewood Flossmoor, and plus the fact that he has enormous ability. And the fact is that he works as hard as anybody that I've ever seen and harder than most. So I don't think that Jerry Reinsdorf and Scott Reifert and Bob Grimm and Brooks Boyer could have made a better hire than Jason Benetti.
I don't either. I mean, he is, you know, if you're watching the TV broadcast, he's got such a touch with this because he's like you said, his voice is very soothing. And I know you've worked with great legends, right? I mean, let's face it. But there is something that is just that he's soothing, but he's also you have this sense, and this I think is what makes a great baseball broadcaster, because it's different than all other sports, because you're not just doing the baseball game. It's a 4 hour, 3.5 hour, whatever it turns out to be, show in that's different than just the action on the field, because there's so much time in between the action. So there's a lot of storytelling, there's a lot of interactivity, and you got to go in different directions. And you know, you've worked with greats, you yourself. I mean, sometimes you got to call a guy out for doing something that doesn't make any kind of sense, or you got to give some sort of context to something that only baseball guys would know. But one thing that Benetti does that I think is absolutely amazing is that he gives you this sense that at any given moment he might be saying something that you're just not quite sure. You know, there's suspense to what he does. He is a genius, and he's young. How old is that guy?
Well, don't forget he's looking at the game through 35-year-old eyes, and so because he's a millennial, he has a different approach to baseball than most. And what I really like, I get a great deal of pleasure, by the way, out of. He'll come up and he said, "You know, I was just thinking about," and then he gives this idea about how to change the game. He said, "You know, this idea is going to be a little different, but this is what I think should happen." And I said, "Yes, that is an idea. It's not a good idea, but it is an idea, certainly." And so it's really nice to see what he comes up with. I like to irritate him a bit, which is good. And he likes to debate with me, which is also good, because every now and then we get into a dispute, an argument that really is not really an argument, but it's his point of view, my point of view. And he will back up his point of view with a certain amount of numbers and everything
yeah,
that he does as a 35-year-old. So it's really interesting, and I think it makes for a good balanced project.
It does.
I love
the article on you guys in the Sun-Times just a little while back about kind of calling you perfect strangers, because it seemingly don't have that much in common, yet it so works when you come together, that chemistry.
Let me say one thing. The best part of happened today, because I flew in from Arizona. I had a bit of a break, and I read that Danny Farquhar is not only out of the hospital, but he's recovering nicely at home. The doctor said he will pitch again. He can't pitch this year because of the recovery, but this was the best news. It just made my whole day, and I think anybody associated with the White Sox and the various teams that Danny played for know what a wonderful man he is. And the fact that his wife and his mother were in the stands when he did collapse in the dugout, and the fact that the personnel got to him so quickly. So kudos to the White Sox and their EMTs and the doctors at Rush. And Danny is doing just fine. I know he's got a million well-wishers, and so the story is just great. It's a beautiful story, and it made my day.
Yeah,
a lot of really is. Fans days.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and again, this isn't really about whether or not he ever pitches again. You know, just that they can have, a life with his family and do whatever he wants to do moving forward. But the fact that, you know, he's so intent upon returning, and I this is one of those really unique moments, I think, every Chicago sports franchise has had a development moment. And there are so many storylines that surround this young team right now. It is, it is fun to watch. And we were talking last week with you about, you know, are they having too much fun for a team that, you know, isn't that productive on the field? But you know, you do see that, like Tim Anderson. Can I just go back to Tim Anderson for a second? Here is a kid.
Here, go get him.
You watch this kid. You watch this kid right now, and as a team leader. And as a guy, you know, he had a little kerfuffle because he was, you know, celebrating too much. And the other teams were like, hey, you can't celebrate, you know, scoreboard or whatever it said.
Right.
But when, you know, was it Saturday that he had two home runs Saturday? I mean, this is you're watching an emerging baseball star in Chicago. Obviously, the north side now is packed with, you know, a murderer's row, although they're having a little bit of a slide right now. But wow, I just, you know, the thing that scares me a little bit, and I know that you're not, you know, no one's privy to what, you know, front office is going to do in a moment like this, but are there at a point where you're really trying to develop, there are untouchables, right, on these teams? Would Tim Anderson be one of those?
No, absolutely not. Look, if they want to trade Mike Trout for Tim Anderson, they'll back up the plane for him and send him to Anaheim. So there are no untouchables. Babe Ruth was sold to the New York Yankees from the Boston Red Sox. If he wasn't an untouchable, there is no such thing. And when you're trying to build a ball club that's less than a dynasty, you don't have untouchables. I haven't seen an untouchable. I haven't seen anybody that can't be traded. I mean, that's just kind of the way it is. If a team wants to overpay tremendously for him, then yes, they would move him in a heartbeat. However, that being said, they're not going to shop him. He's not one of those guys they want to shop because I think the upside is unlimited. I told him before the season that he was going to hit 25 home runs this year, and nothing he's done thus far has dissuaded me that he's not going to do that. I think he's surprisingly strong. I don't think people realize how strong he is. He can use all parts of the field, and he will. And when he figures out what the pitchers are trying to do to him, I think from an offensive side, I think it's unlimited what he can do. However, as a young player, what he has to learn is to keep the focus on the field, to anticipate the ball coming to him each and every time. That's the sort of mental discipline that all young players have to go through. And Tim has some mental lapses, but his talent is astronomical. When you understand that he was late to the game of baseball, he was a basketball player, and he picked up baseball a lot later than most, you realize just how far he's come. And you saw the talent that made him a White Sox number one draft pick. So Tim Anderson has an unlimited upside. What he has to learn is the ability to think his way through situations on a play-by-play basis. Don't always go for the flashy play. When you turn a double play, you've got to make sure it's turned. Yeah. You harken back to Omar Vizquel playing shortstop. Every double play that was supposed to be made, Omar made it. He could make the flashy play, but he made every routine play. When Tim gets to that point, there is no doubt he's going to be one of the more valuable players on this team. And I think because he is becoming a team leader on a team that desperately needs someone like Tim Anderson, they will not shop him. So, again, you know, someone comes to them and knocks their eyes out with a deal, sure, he'll be traded like everybody else, but they don't want to trade him. They believe, along with Moncada, that's a double play combination for many years to come.
I want to go over to the other side of town for a second. It was an unspeakable injury. Mm. An unspeakable injury on Saturday. Yadier Molina is a first ballot Hall of Famer. As far as I'm concerned,
no doubt about that. That's by acclamation. He's going to make it for sure.
Yeah, and Dr. and Mrs. Molina, who sent I don't know how many kids into Major League Baseball, there should be like a family membership in the Hall of Fame, I think, in Cooperstown. But Chris Bryant fouled off a ball, hit him in the groin. He couldn't get him up. He had to have this surgery. He had a hematoma as a result of this. Mm-hmm. He's out for at least 4 weeks. I mean, and you never think about baseball injuries, right? You always think about, you know, unspeakable injuries in football and even some in basketball. Mm-hmm. But wow. I mean, and, you know, that was quite a moment right there. And you really, you know, you hope, because here's a guy who's, It was so spectacular and so much fun to watch behind the plate. And, you know, one of the most deadly, second base, pickoff guys. He's just an amazing, amazing, amazing athlete. And, you know, you just hope that he comes back from that. And you wonder, you know, as a catcher, you know, guys who've had, you know, the memory of that alone is just going to be something that's going to be hard to come back
yeah,
from.
Yeah, people saw that video cringed. When they saw
yeah, well, don't forget a couple of things. First of all, that is not a first in baseball. It will not be a last. There was a pitcher years ago named Wade Blasingame who got hit with a line drive and actually lost a testicle, had to have it surgically right. removed. So, I mean, this happens all the time. You find catchers who wear cups. You find sometimes it breaks the cup, especially the ones who use the hard plastic. And I think all pitchers should wear them. And I remember a former major league player who was now a manager when I was in Class A. His name was Roy McMillan. And I asked him when he played, did he wear a cup? And he said, son, I've been around this game so long, when I watch a game on television, I wear a cup. it kind of explains to you just a little bit about where the thought process for infielders are. And as far as Yadier, he's going to come back. He's going to come back every bit as good as he was. And yes, obviously he's never going to forget that. And when you look at the video, it is cringeworthy.
Oh.
But you realize, first of all, these guys that play behind the plate, each and every one of them, they might not be the greatest catchers around, but they're universally about the toughest guy on the field. You cannot play that position unless you are an astonishingly tough guy, because you just what they call swallow the pain. You get hit in the point of the shoulder. I started as a catcher. And I got to tell you, I got hit in the point of the shoulder. I wanted to cry. Of course, I was a young kid. I probably did cry. But getting hit on top of the foot, getting hit by a, we didn't wear the hard helmets then. You get hit on a backswing. You get hit in the back of the head.
Ouch.
Even with a hard helmet, that's going to rattle your cage. And plus, foul tips routinely off the mask. I'm shocked. Do you remember what football players used to wear? It wasn't a pad exactly, but it stopped the head from going back. I think Brian Cox
the neck roll.
Wore one of those.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that catchers don't do that because of the whiplash that they sustain and the amount of concussions that they have. I mean, Joe Mauer's not catching because of all the concussions he had. It's a tough position played by very tough guys. Molina is one of those guys. He'll come back and he will assume his rightful position behind the plate, and then eventually he'll make his way to Cooperstown as the best of the flying Molina brothers. There was three of them.
Yes.
He's the one who's the best of the three by far.
Yeah. Just amazing. And catchers, I'll never forget as a kid watching Steve Swisher, who was a catcher for the Cubs, play in St. Louis. It was like an 11 o'clock start. It was a getaway day, and it was 110 degrees in the sun. And I remember at the end of that, they talked about how Steve, the next day, they talked about how Steve Swisher had lost 20 pounds during the game.
I lost 10 pitching on July 4th, and, you know, you try to put it back, but you're exhausted. Plus, Steve Swisher was traded as one of the four players, including me, traded to from the White Sox to the Cubs in the deal for Ron Santo, which I describe as the trade that hurt both teams. Santo played 1 year and then he quit. And of course, I did not win the Cy Young Award with the Cubs. And Swisher was over there along with Ken Frehling and Jim Kremel. Not exactly household names, but that was the deal. It was 4-for-1, and it didn't work out particularly well for either team. But Swisher turned out to be a wonderful in the horse racing.
Yes.
They call it a stud.
He was a sire.
He gave birth to Nick Swisher, who had a really nice career.
Yeah.
Was a member of the White Sox for a bit, but Nick did very well in his career, and he was Steve's son. So
we give
Steve credit for that.
Yes, we do. All right. Thank you very much, Stoney. We will talk to you soon. Steve Stone,
Steve
Stone.
Take care.
All right.
Bye, man.
We White Sox baseball starts again tomorrow, right here on 720 WGN. A lot of interesting storylines there on the South Side this year. Let us now find out from Judy what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
A decision on the Iran deal expected tomorrow.
Oh, boy. The news or the sports or the traffic? The traffic.
Let's
the traffic.
Traffic
is brought to you by Blaine's Farm and Fleet. Here's Violetta. It's a Rokan show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, one of my old partners in crime is in the studio with us.
Yeah.
Dennis Culleton is it's a very important man in Chicago, as it turns out. He's one of those guys.
He knows people.
Yeah, he's the guy behind the guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you see the Ricketts family out there doing stuff and talking about things, and they've run everything past Dennis before they've done any of it. Dennis basically okay.
Or throw me overboard.
He's right, or they blame him.
It's his fault.
When things have gone wrong, they've blamed him for it. But things, I think, for the Ricketts family have gone pretty well, I would say. This whole the whole thing that's happening at Wrigley, the hotel.
It's fantastic.
Turns out. And you now, all right. So when the city was fighting this, I'm just going to set this. This is not what Dennis is here to talk about.
No.
But I should point this out, because Dennis and I have known each other our entire careers. And he and I had the unfortunate co-responsibility. back at the very, we both started at WMAQ Radio, and Dennis was a writer and producer, and I was a production assistant and a writer, and he and I were given the co-responsibility on our shift of calling up and waking up Jim Fregosi, the then manager of the Chicago White Sox, every morning,
really?
And getting him to comment on what was the last night's game and what was coming up tonight.
Oh, I bet he loved you too. Or was it an early wake-up call?
Sometimes. It was a day game.
Right, yeah.
Early for a baseball manager, 10 a.m.
Yeah. Right. You know. Yeah, early for me, too, as it turned out. But we would have to call him up, and he always would give us the exact same answer, no matter what the question
Before
was.
Before the tape was rolling, he was most interesting.
Okay, we rolling?
Okay. We actually could have used the same soundbite from week to week. Oh, good ball game, good ball club, pitching well, good stuff.
Round bat, round ball, got to hit it square. Got to put your pants on one leg at a time, Dennis. Hey, hi there. Is always the way he would answer the phone. Hey, hi there. And so it turned out that on at least one occasion, I can say this now because the statute of limitations has run out.
Mm-hmm.
I lost the tape that I was recording. I didn't record it properly. And used our standard. His standard answer was, it's a square bat, square ball. I got to hit it square. You know, round bat, got to hit square.
You can't do
and
that.
And I just did that. Yeah. So I'm sorry.
You can admit that now. Yeah. Real rehearsed this show back in those days off microphone. Yeah.
Slightly different version.
Nothing but slapstick.
That is true. And sometimes at the most tragic moments in that newsroom. But it was fun.
Oh, yeah.
It was quite a learning experience. Learned at the feet of masters, man.
Uh-huh.
When we go back and you think about WMAQ, which was the competitor to W, at that point I was there when it was NBC, but NBC sold it to Westinghouse, which wanted to put on a competitor to BBM. And they were like, who's going to compete against BBM? Who'd be stupid enough to compete against BBM in this town? They were. But they brought in this team of people who ended up going on to incredible greatness in news radio.
Mm.
The guy who invented the format, essentially, was our program director, Scotty Herman, who ended up being the guy who reinvented 1010 wins and all that stuff in New York.
He's a genius.
Yeah, he really was. And he was like this kid in suspenders. I'm like, why is he wearing suspenders? He was like, it turns out, I was working with this guy. I was like, yes, sir, no, sir. It turns out he was like 2 years older than me.
He was the program director.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a crazy thing.
He was a good one.
Anyway, this is, well, that's, you know, who cares about this? This is old news just for us. But.
Not of interest to the listeners, but
no, not at all.
Sorry, I had to live through that.
Very entertaining to us, but the Dennis went on to go, you know, become the mouthpiece for many important organizations in Chicago, and not the least of which, is the Chicago Bar Association.
That's right.
And because Dennis went to, in the middle of all this, he went to law school.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, I don't know
where'd you go to law school.
Spent enough time with Roe, you realize you need lawyers. Need a good lawyer, right?
He saw my greatness, but he also saw that I would be in a lot of legal trouble before it was over.
Yeah, it's always good to have a good lawyer in the house.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Well, I appreciate getting the chance to come by because Roe is going to give of his time this Thursday at lunchtime, and he's going to be the keynote speaker to the Chicago Bar Association's Herman Kogan Media Awards. If that name rings a bell, Herman was the father of Rick Kogan,
of the
Chicago Tribune, and was a great raconteur in his own right, and wrote about a lot of Chicago history, including the Chicago Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And so they named these awards in honor of him to reward all of the great hardworking reporters that do the unglamorous work of covering the courts, covering the legal beat, investigative reporting. Anna and I were just talking about how she is a Kogan Award winner.
And
you know what hard work that was. A lot of people don't know that.
No.
Before Roe was a radio smart aleck,
he was an investigative reporter.
Obscurity as an investigative reporter. So
yeah.
we get a chance to encourage all of the news organizations that have to commit time against great economic and political headwinds these days.
Absolutely.
And we really appreciate that. So this is a great day to celebrate all the investigative and legal reporters in town.
This town would not be what it is if it were not for the young, in a lot of cases, the young men and women who go into all those great newsrooms, whether it was the newspaper newsrooms, the Sun-Times and the Tribune. You just stop and you think about the things that were broken on either newspaper reporting, mostly mm-hmm. newspaper reporting.
A lot of it.
Or wire service reporting here. The great, there were, before, if it were not for the City News Bureau, mm-hmm. which trained a lot of young reporters, but they had their own investigative unit, and they would send these people in, and they would work then in the Sun-Times or the Tribune. The TV newsrooms that had big investigative pieces, like CBS did back when I was there in the day, like NBC does now, ABC does now. It is astounding to think about how many things we would not know about in this town.
Oh, yeah.
That's 100%. Why this fake news moment just chaps my ass. And that's a technical term.
Right.
Because it's when people go, well, it's fake news, you're just making that stuff up. I know, you know, mm-hmm. Dennis, you know how much work goes in to making sure that the stories that get on the air or get in print are accurate. And if they are not accurate,
it's extremely hard in this town.
It is very hard in this town. And if they're not, and in the Washington Post, like you were pointing out, the Washington Post had to, you know, pull back a story. When they make a mistake, the world knows about it,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not like, oh, we've made a mistake and we just forget about it.
These aren't hunches. Investigative reporting takes time. A lot of reporters who follow these leads, they spend all of their time doing it. They're off time, they're on time, they're living these stories in order to prove them and back them up with multiple sources and be able to deliver the kinds of stories that they're truly breaking for the first time to let people know of something that's going on. It is tough.
Really hard work.
Very hard work. And sometimes at great personal peril.
It is.
And these folks do not make a lot of money. They're not the
superstars of the news business.
Right. Pancake makeup princes and princesses of you know, in front of the camera. They are the people who really do the work. And it is, and you know, you stop, you think one of the, to just the stories that are being honored here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Impressive list.
Are, you know, they make it, whether it's police corruption or it is governmental corruption, that are things that really do matter. Court corruption,
mm-hmm.
things that actually affect the lives. You know, I'm a gigantic supporter of the Chicago Police Department and the work that they do, but there are bad cops and they have to get called out.
Exactly.
Right? There are bad judges, and they have to be called
Absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely.
You had, you know, the Glennon, one of the nominees this year, Marsha Bartel from Channel 9,
yep.
you know, was, along with Sapelsa, the ones that uncovered that crazy story up in the northwestern suburbs about that police chief and you know, and the death. And
that's
what,
right.
what was that thing really all about? And everybody was like, oh, no, this is about, you know, it's part of a police murder. No.
They knew about it early on and started following those leads.
And the story they're also nominated for this week is a wrongful conviction case that goes back to the days when Roe and I were boy reporters in town. The ATM Dana Feitler murder way back in 1989.
That story, interesting. We talked about that on the air.
But there's so many great reporters that are getting honored this Thursday. You can still get tickets if you want to hear inspired, if you want to be inspired by Roe Khan. ChicagoBar.org. It's at Pettirino's downtown. Great lunchtime stop. Food's always good at Pettirino's.
It is good.
And it'll be a great event.
Yeah.
Are you going to do a lot of back in my day?
Yes.
Have you prepared all your remarks?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm going to do that thing. When I would go to these things as a young kid, and, you know, whether Channel 2 was sending me to, you know, these kinds of things to either go collect the awards that they were winning and I had nothing to do with, they would send the young kid reporters to this stuff. Mm-hmm. First of all, I liked it because I was out of the newsroom and I didn't have to worry I was going to get yelled at by Walter. But the nice. But the thing is, I would sit there and I'd watch, you know, there would be some, you know, pompous old guy who would get up there, mm-hmm. and, you know, announce, well, I'll never forget that one time, you know, and now I'm that guy.
Now you're the guy. Now is your chance so, to go impress upon the young ones in the crowd.
Yeah, I'm going to try to make it a little more entertaining. I am so thank you guys for asking me to do this, because I'm so proud of not only this journalistic community in this town.
Me too.
That I came out of. I would not exactly call myself a journalist now. I'm a commentator. That's a different deal. Very important. But the people who do the real hard reporting, you know, the stuff that it's not about opinion, it's about fact. Right. And the fact that we no longer can discern between opinion and fact is disturbing to me. But the legal community, what this town has produced in terms of lawyers and judges and, you know, the people who have gone on to make great case law out of Chicago, and the things that have happened here that reverberate around the country that have to be, and this town's always making news one way or the other, you know, for good or for bad. But also the people we have sent onto the federal bench I mean, you know, Patrick Fitzgerald is up to his eyeballs here, you know, former U.S. attorney, mm-hmm. That's a tough Chicago one if there has ever been one, right? That's, you know, he's up to his eyeballs in what's going on now in Washington, right? And these other lawyers, you know, whether it's, you know, Webb or any of these other, that they always seem to somehow find their way in. Yeah.
Always in the mix.
And it's just this, you know, the president can make all the funny wants of Chicago, but look out, because the lawyers at the end of the day that will either take him down or keep him up, they're likely to come from here. I know of two of them right now who are involved in both sides of this, right. Both helping him and, you know, going after him.
Right.
That's a great point.
Yeah. So, all right, Dennis, it was great.
ChicagoBar.org.
There you go.
Rokan tickets.
Rokan tickets.
Petorino's.
I think Petorino's really is the sell right there. Have the chicken. It's really the finest in the city.
Great food.
Yeah. I think that's really where we are here. I don't think it's about me. But
back in my day.
Also, if you go to this, you can learn about what these stories are, because sometimes they pass by you, you know. That
Yeah, you don't see them all.
You don't see what has happened here. And how these organizations have, you know, are, if it weren't, I'm telling you, do you know the kind of stealing that, you know, the stealing that goes on in this town? Imagine the stealing that would go on if this town were, right? I mean, as the great Bill Cameron, who we worked with, Bill Cameron, one of the great.
Over here at City Hall.
One of the great radio reporters, so and as he said, this town is, you know, the city budget is one third stealing. Right? It's just what it is.
What a great line.
Right? One third stealing, one third waste. And then, so you could probably cut, you know, 60% out might be okay. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Dennis.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for saying nice things about me in a room that doesn't believe them. All right. Mart's here.
Yes, sir.
Why don't you tell us what's coming up at the top of the hour?